here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Okay, we got some trouble over yonder, and it got really loud over the weekend. It got really ugly because it was really ugly, but we're going to turn down the noise on it and find out what really happened because this is not an isolated thing. Yeah, the violence was, but what's driving a lot of this is not isolated. We're seeing it in the UK. We're seeing it in America. We're seeing it worldwide, frankly. Jack Rowlett is back with us. My friend, great to see you again. Welcome back to the program.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thrilled to have you. You've been all over media over there. I saw you with our Canadian friends a couple of days ago. This latest round of violence in the UK, I want to start big picture and then we'll zoom in on the things of it. Last time I talked to you, we were getting ready. We had just done the election. Is this the first crisis for the new Labour government? Because one thing that cuts, when you start having images of rioting on the streets and burning police vans, we have this crime, and we need to separate the crime from the riots here. We have this crime with these three little girls killed. We'll get into details of that in a minute. Is it fair to really call it? We thought it would maybe be the economy or Ukraine or immigration. This is tied to immigration in a way, but is this the first real crisis of the new Labour government?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's the first real acute crisis. I mean, you mentioned the other stuff like the economy, immigration, Ukraine, the health service, all that stuff. The fact is, the kind of inheritance that Labour have got from the Tories has been so bad that they're actually facing lots of crises on multiple fronts. But this is the first big kind of crisis that's really captured the public attention, that's very acute, and that needs kind of immediate action from the government. And so far, at least, people have not been hugely impressed with how the Labour government have handled it. You look at the polling that's out, more people say that Keir Starmer is handling the rioting badly than handling it well. And I think there's a sense that they're not clamping down hard enough on the rioting and the crime. And if you look at, again, the polling that's come out today from YouGov, which shows that immigration and crime have shot up the list of issues that people think are most important to the country. So immigration is now the top issue. Crime is now the third issue. And they're up about 20 points from just 3 or 4 weeks ago. So the Labour government will really be judged on how well it deals with this. And especially when you're facing a crisis like this so early into your term, you know, it's not like they can point to a lot of good stuff that they've done so far that they've kind of, you know, built up a well of support among the public that they can kind of fall back on. Actually, this could be make or break, really, depending on what happens next and how well they handle the rioting that's scheduled to take place this week.
Yeah, and the thing about this is we talked about it after the election. We've been talking about this for a while with Sir Keir Starmer, the current prime minister. Outside of the political stuff, his big argument was he's stable, he's safe, you can trust him with the levers of power. It was a stability argument. I mean, you can put a lot of other stuff on it, but when you really dig down to the bottom, it was like, okay, we need to stabilize government. It's been chaotic under the Tories and the revolving door and all that. We're going to be the stable folks, and we're going to have this ambitious, you know, agenda of this, that, and the other. The reason this hurts, and the rioting ain't his fault, but the response is something you can fairly judge a leader on. It hits right at the core of why people voted for this government in the first place. Is that a fair way to lay it out?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I think there's another thing as well, which is that Keir Starmer, before he came into politics, he was head of the Crown Prosecution Service in the UK, which is a kind of government organization which basically prosecutes people that the police arrest people, they're charged, and then the Crown Prosecution Service kind of takes up the case. And so he made a big deal about how, you know, he prosecuted terrorists, he prosecuted serious criminals, he was, in charge of ensuring that they went to prison. And that was a reason why people should vote for him, because he had this track record on crime. And actually, if you look, so that the last time Britain had any sort of riots on any sort of scale like this was in 2011. We had rioting in quite a few cities across the UK, and Keir Starmer was in charge of the Crown Prosecution Service then. So he was responsible for bringing a lot of those rioters to justice. And he's also pointed to that as being his track record on why people should trust him on this. So absolutely, it's that stability thing. And if we do see the rioting continue, if things continue to spiral out of control, then yeah, you potentially see an absolute decimation of support for Keir Starmer, because you're exactly right. That's why people supported him.
And just so we have the background around Jack Rowlett joining us, explain for the U.S. and the international audience that maybe not be familiar, there's some real underlying stuff with the actual criminal justice system in England right now, whether it's the prison system, whether it's the local, look, the London Metropolitan Police is world famous. Everybody knows them, but they're actually a kind of an entity in and of themselves almost in the criminal justice system. And then you have all these local municipalities, local councils, all these local things. They've really been struggling. They've been hammered on things like funding. There's a lot of debate about how local policing is done. And then you put on top of that the prison thing that we talked about the last time you're here, because that gets into yimby nimby stuff. It's like, oh, we need more prisons. No, you can't put it where I live. You got to put it where this other guy lives. And then that guy says the same thing, and on and on and on and go. That's all underneath this, and that goes to part of the government turnovers, because this is something Labor had in their original stuff when they first laid out, it's like, here's where we're going to spend our money. Prisons was high on that list. Reforming some of this local policing was high on this list. So that part plays into this. Just explain it to the international audience, though, because they may not be familiar that there's a couple different layers to the criminal justice system in the UK, and they're not all working in concert right now, and that's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. So the criminal justice system in the UK is in an absolute mess, as you say. We've got problems with prisons because we haven't built enough prisons for a long time. So we just don't have enough prison cells. We don't have enough places to put people when they're convicted. And we've actually, one of the Labour government's first actions when it came into office was to say that they were going to release some criminals early, so about two-thirds or halfway through their sentence, because there's no room to put new criminals as we wait to build new prisons. So that's been a big problem. There's also a massive backlog in the courts. There's been a huge rows between the previous Tory government and public prosecutors over their salaries. And there were strikes kind of boycotts of overtime. And so that's led to a real backlog in terms of cases going through the court system. So it takes absolutely ages in a lot of cases to bring criminals to justice. And then you've got big problems in the police, because over the past 14 years or so, had massive cuts in funding to police, and particularly big cuts to community policing. So these are the police officers that are kind of civic neighborhoods in the UK. So you would kind of, you know, have a community police officer or two or three, and you would kind of know their faces, and they would have, you know, a relationship with the local community, and they would, you know, they would be kind of be able to keep an eye on things. And because they knew their patch, they would be able to kind of assess when there was, you know, tension stirring, when what needs more attention, what doesn't need so much attention. And actually that has really been massively cut, and that's created a big disconnect between communities and the police. And then you've also got the fact that lots of these local authorities that you mentioned, so those local kind of municipal governments in the UK, a lot of funding for them has been cut. And so for things like people who are experiencing a mental health crisis, that used to be dealt with by local authority, municipal services. But because they've been cut so much, the police are then having to deal with those things now. And so they don't have as much time to do what they should be doing, which is fighting crime. So the whole system has completely fallen apart. There's a real sense as well that people are getting away with lots of crimes, that because the police are so overstretched, they're not investigating lots of thefts. Like if you get your bike stolen or your phone stolen or your house burgled, a lot of the time that just isn't investigated in the UK anymore, because they just don't have the numbers. And you know, you can be able to use these, like, you know, you'll find my iPhone or whatever on your phone and say to the police, like, I know where my phone is, I know where the criminals have taken it, and they just won't do anything about it. They'll just give you a quote for your insurance. So there's a real loss of faith in the criminal justice system that's happened in the UK, particularly in the last decade, and that's the kind of backdrop against which these riots are happening.
And what you're getting to there is the best policing we know from long experience in all of recorded human history is preventative policing. And when you have funding cuts, you just mentioned it, you don't get things that, well, this is a mental health issue or just a drunken guy issue, and those get escalated into violence, and now you got a criminal justice issue. That's the escalator at kind of the bottom of an inverse pyramid. And then when you have other institutional problems, like local funding for mental health care, local prisons having problems, and then it goes all the way up, and you could even loop in the debates over the NHS and that sort of thing. This is kind of the trigger point for a whole lot of the other stuff going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you kind of have this problem across the whole of the British state at the moment, that we're not doing enough to prevent bad things from happening, whether that's preventing people from becoming sick, preventing them from committing crimes, preventing them from having, you know, mental health difficulties, because the state capacity is so limited. And these things are all interconnected, because absolutely, if you don't have, youth clubs, for example, if you don't have services for local children, then they're more likely to be on the streets, you know, up to no good than if they've got access to that support, or, you know, they've got access to after school clubs, for example. So it really is, it's a kind of reflection of lots of different failings across the states, and fundamentally the British government and the British state just not being able to meet the needs of the people anymore, and just not being there for them.
Yeah, that's a bad combination for peace and prosperity in a country.
And so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Jack Rowlett joining us, UK contributor to Young Voices. He's all over media, does great work, has a good Substack you need to subscribe to. I do. You should, too. Let's get to what actually happened that kicked this off, because this is getting picked up and put into what's already going on. But let's deal with the issue at hand here. There's three little girls, B.B. King, age 6, LZ Dot Steakham, age 7, Alicia Da Silva Aguiar, age 9. Boy, if you were writing a plot for something that would click all the cultural news boxes, this would do it. They're young children. They're at a Taylor Swift themed party or event. And a knife man who we are told just turned 18, so he's being treated as a youth. We'll come back to that in a minute. He comes in with a knife, injures 10, kills these three little girls. That's what happened. Now, everything else is getting put on it, but just deal with that part of it. We now know that there's an investigation going on in it. Just talk us through that piece of it, because everybody just jumped straight to the riots and we're not getting into what actually happened here, because knife crime is an ongoing issue in the UK. Violence by young offenders, you just mentioned it, that's way up. That goes into this. And then we have the tragedy of these three little girls being killed.
Yeah. So it's an unspeakable tragedy. So knife crime, as you say, has gone up a lot in the UK over the past 10 years. It's up by about 50%. So very sadly, this type of thing happens on a semi-regular basis. I think the real difference and the reason why this shocked so many people was that it was attacking young children and killing young children. And that type of thing isn't so common over here. And particularly, you know, if you listen to the residents of that part of Southport where it happened, you know, they would say they live in a pretty ordinary, normal part of the country. It's not the type of place where you expect, you know, stabbings to be happening like that, and it came completely out of the blue. But what really links this event in Southport about 10 days ago and the rioting that we've seen ever since is the disinformation that occurred afterwards. So in the immediate aftermath of that attack, that incident, there's a lot of information spread on social media saying that the perpetrator was an asylum seeker. And the context of this is, you know, the UK has had big issues dealing with the number of asylum seekers that have been coming over across the channel from France. And there have been instances of people who are here waiting to be processed for asylum, committing crimes while they're here. And that's created a lot of public tension and public anger. And so there was some thought after this of, oh, could this be another instance of an asylum seeker committing a crime? And then there was disinformation spread on social media. So there were various accounts on X, which have since been linked to Russian bot farms, essentially saying that this attack had been perpetrated by an asylum seeker in the UK. And the police denied this. They said this is not the case, but the disinformation spread and spread and spread. And then you had members of the British Parliament, you had people like Nigel Farage, and you had various commentators on news channels over here amplifying this and saying, oh, well, I don't think the police are telling us everything that there is to know. And actually, you know, it kind of implying that maybe it could be an asylum seeker and that there was some sort of police cover up. And so this then sparked quite a bit of anger. And it, you know, it spread like wildfire on social media. And then you have other kind of agitators, far right people getting involved, spreading that disinformation, and then coordinating. And then that's kind of the spark that lit these riots.
And what that did was, we've seen this over and over again. This is a broad issue that is brought to light by this, but protests getting hijacked by people that have professional intentions. So it's one thing to take to the streets and protest. This riot actually started as a peace vigil by some accounts, depending on which version of the story you want to believe. These events getting taken over by people who are stirring up people. We've got the charge list for these guys. We'll go through it in a minute. But this riot was stoked up. There's no debate about this being stoked up. How do we approach this? Because we're seeing it again and again. We're seeing it in America. We're seeing it in the UK. We're seeing it worldwide. Social media, misinformation, stoking people up, taking something really bad, and then outside agitators or professional agitators infiltrating, taking over, whatever term you want to use for this, and making it way, way worse than it needs to be, to the point that you have some really scary violence. And frankly, it's amazing nobody got killed here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to crack down really hard on it. And part of the problem is that lots of these people who've been rioting and looting over the past week or so, they're not actually that politically motivated. They're just, you know, they spot an opportunity to commit some crime. They spot an opportunity to steal from shops, to, you know, commit kind of acts of disturbance and violence, and they're just bored and they take those opportunities. And we've seen that before in the UK in the 2011 riots that I mentioned earlier. That was kind of the dynamic that happened there. There was an initial kind of political motivation and peaceful protest in response to a black man being killed by the police. And then it kind of lit the fuse for lots of people kind of hijacking it and just for the hell of it, just because, you know, they're bored, essentially. And I think there's a similar element to that here. If you look at lots of the footage, you know, there's a clip out of some people, they're robbing a shop and saying that it's like Christmas because they're being able to steal so much stuff for free. So a lot of people are just taking advantage of that opportunity. But then alongside that, you've got these sort of almost professional kind of agitators on the far right. And I think it is important, you know, I know in Britain and I think in America too, we kind of bandy terms like far left and far right about pretty easily. And we say that lots of things are far right or far left when actually they're not. They're just people we disagree with. But in this case, we are dealing with the far right. These are, you know, Nazis. They are, you know, neo-Nazis. They are people who want, you know, an entirely white UK. They want to, you know, attack mosques. They've been trying to set fire to hotels housing asylum seekers. Like, these are really dangerous extremist people. And I think the way you crack down on it is, let's call it what it is, which is terrorism. And when you say that it's terrorism and you say that the people involved are committing acts of terrorism, you kind of give it much more of a sense of taboo, and it stops being, you can't really apologize for it anymore. You can't really dismiss it as you know, politically motivated trouble. You know, it's something that has to be cracked down on by the state. And actually, we talked a little bit earlier about state capacity being so diminished, all those police cuts, all those you know, court backlogs. Actually, the state really needs to get a grip on things now, because if it allows things to continue to spiral out of control, you know, and you get more and more riots, the police don't have the capacity in the UK to deal with that. They are going to be overrun. So you have to cut it off at the source. You have to say to people, actually, it's not, you know, if you're a far right agitator, we are going to charge you with serious offences and you are going to go to prison for a long time. And if you're someone who's just hijacking these protests just because, you know, you want to loot a shop, you know, you're just taking advantage, that is a serious crime and you will get found out and you will go to prison. And so it puts people off.
We have the first three people that went through the court system for these riots, Jack. I'm looking at these guys. The first guy basically claimed, he's like, look, I'm clearly drunk. He said he was drunk. He got 20 months. He pled guilty, whatever the term over there is. Another guy's almost 58. He has 35 years worth of like 18 convictions in 30 some years. He has a history of violence. We don't need, you know, real in-depth analysis for that one. Another one's a guy who, in addition to the riot charges, took time out to threaten a woman. So he got a couple more charges tacked on top of that. So that's it. And all three of these guys say they're not political. They don't really like, you know, people coming. The direct quote here is, I don't like people coming over here, but I'm not really political. This seems to be a theme with a lot of these rioters. They're being charged. They're getting round up. They're admitting their crimes and going to prison pretty quickly here. But they're not really the problem. I know they're the problem. I know they're charged. They need to pay for the crimes. They're not the problem. The ability of outside agitators to weaponize people like this, that's the problem. And I don't think anybody's got a real good solution to that right now.
Yeah, so I think that is a big part of the problem. And it's also the kind of inability of the police to have the numbers in lots of parts of the country to crack down really hard on these types of riots as soon as they happen as well. And I think there's, in a sense, this could have been about anything, right? There are these far right agitators who are, you know, very against immigration, very against refugees and asylum seekers. But actually, for lots of these people who are committing these, you know, acts of criminality, the rioting could have been about anything. They are just taking advantage of the opportunity to, you know, commit some low level crime, to, you know, have fights. You know, there's no football on in the UK at the moment. The weather's been really good. People are bored. You know, if you're a low-level criminal, you spot the opportunity to join in with some rioting, you're going to do it because you have nothing better to do with your time, especially if you don't think you're going to get caught. And actually, the evidence over the past few years, with lots of crime just not being prosecuted or taking absolutely ages to progress through the system, you know, you might think, well, I've got a good chance of not being caught, especially if there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of other people rioting. It's going to take the state ages to get through the whole list of charging people. And thankfully, they have been able to charge people more quickly. There's been courts sitting 24 hours in some parts of the country at the moment so that they can get these people through the system quickly. But there is this kind of sense that we're not really sure how you can stop this stuff from happening in the first place without having built up the state capacity. It's sort of like at the point where it happens, it's too late. You know, it shouldn't be getting to this stage. You need more community policing. You need more resources for young people. You need more police funding in general, and you need to solve that court backlog, because then you can immediately solve these problems, and that you don't leave criminals thinking that they've got a decent chance of being able to get away with these crimes. And there's also the problem of social media as well, and that's a big kind of talking point in the UK at the moment. Is lots of these far-right groups in the UK, so Britain First and the English Defence League and the various people associated with them, they didn't really have a platform because they've been banned from all these social media platforms. And then Elon Musk bought Twitter and he unbanned all these people, and now they're getting millions and millions of impressions on X, and they're being amplified by Elon Musk himself. And so I think there's a big conversation about the role that social media and the internet plays in triggering these instances of crime, and in triggering exactly what you mentioned, which is where these kind of low-level criminals and just, you know, antisocial people can be kind of manipulated by people with a political agenda.
Yeah, Jack Rowlett joining us from over in the UK. You brought up Elon Musk. Kind of made news over here. He took a picture of some of this rioting and put, "This is what civil war looks like," out on Twitter, X, whatever they're calling it this week. I got all kinds of thoughts about that, but how did it hit you? Because you're actually over there. This, at best, is not helping. At worst, is maliciously ignorant. I don't want to try to mind read, but I've got a long list of this man's actions, and I know he's got a lot of fans, and I know a lot of people like some of the, I like the SpaceX he does. I think that's fantastic for humanity. I think what he's doing with Twitter's a absolute mess. But when you're tweeting something like that, when you're that guy and you say things like that, you don't get to say you're ignorant, in my opinion. I don't think it's, you can't do that, but he's doing it. And he seems pretty oblivious to the effect it has. And it's not just him. There's others. You mentioned the Nigel Farages of the world that are office holders now and should be held to that standard. How do we talk about that piece of it? Because people are like, oh, he's a star. Everybody likes him. People have strong opinions for and against an Elon Musk. But when somebody like that says this is what civil war looks like, and what you really have is a drunken riot that was fired up by outside agitators over a really complex political issue, how should somebody like me talk about like that? The talking heads. Let's just stick to you and me and what we do. How should we cover that? Do we go after Musk? Do we go after his business? I don't think you can shut down all of Twitter and X. I think they should have banned these people, but that's a business decision. How do we even talk about that piece, though? Because Musk has got a lot of sway here and doesn't particularly care which way that swings.
Yeah, I think it's really hard because it comes back to the debate about free speech. And I think a lot of what Musk has done with X is to kind of say, well, it's a space for anyone to be able to share all their thoughts and ideas, and we're not going to be really cracking down on different types of speech, as was the case under the previous ownership of Twitter, and as is the case on lots of other social media platforms. But I think it's because, you know, I'm pro-free speech. I think you should be able to say what you like, but there's always that kind of point where you're inciting violence, and that's where it becomes unacceptable. And I think that is what Musk is doing. And that needs to be condemned, because it's not just the civil war comment that you mentioned. You know, he's been absolutely doubling down on it. He's come up with this two-tier Keir phrase. He's been kind of trolling Keir Starmer on X and saying that they're that the British police are kind of policing these white far-right thugs more than they're policing Muslims, for example, and really doubling down on that. And he's also, you know, amplifying the voices of, you know, quote tweeting people like Tommy Robinson, who is a real political extremist, far right. You know, he was founder of the English Defence League. He wants a white Britain. You know, he hates Islam. He is as extreme in political terms as you can get. And you have Elon Musk essentially normalizing that type of conduct by sharing this stuff, and it leads to millions and millions of impressions. And it's so hard, you know, it's so hard for us to respond to that, because you don't want to come across as, you know, that you want to clamp down on free speech, that you don't want ideas to be discussed and debated. And I don't think people like us want, you know, to be banning things or, you know, really over legislating about kind of conduct online and what you can say online. But then you look at the impact that this is having. You look at the enormous kind of network effects that you're seeing, where people are seeing this stuff on social media and then going out to riot. It leaves governments in a really impossible position, where actually they're probably going to have to step in and do something, but also any intervention they could make is going to have unintended consequences.
You know where I fall on this with the free speech? Because I'm like you, I believe very strongly in free speech, especially America. You know, we have it right. We put it first in the Bill of Rights for a reason, right? It's supposed to be primary. But what people like Elon Musk want, and the people that he has, and you can follow the tracks on social media. I'm sorry, fanboys, if you don't like this, you just don't like it. Sorry, it's all out there. The people he follows, the people he retweets, the people he talks, he is marinating himself in really not good stuff. You can tell, because he wouldn't otherwise. And he's rich enough. He gets to pick and choose what he, you know, intakes. So I'm going to judge him thusly. But I'm just using him as an example here, because there's lots of other people too. When you really listen to him and you watch their actions, what they're talking about isn't free speech. They want consequence-free speech. They want their ideas to get full run without any consequences to them whatsoever. albeit advertising, which he's now threatening legal action. Good luck with that. Advertisers love to be sued. You knock yourself out. Or like you said, these far extreme groups who were previously banned, they don't think they should get to be banned. They should get to say whatever they want. They want a consequence-free. So when we're talking free speech, if we get to it, I understand there's legal arguments and legal things on free speech in America and also in the UK. The UK has gone way too far, in my opinion, in some aspects. The US is threatening to. But that's my standard, is you're not allowed consequence-free speech. And when you start using consequence-free speech, but using free speech as the argument to not have any consequences, that's the red flag for me. How does it land for you? Where's your line, do you think?
Well, I think it's that line of when it becomes violence. You know, I don't have any problem with people saying or having opinions or sharing opinions that I find heinous, that I think are completely awful. But at the point where you're kind of inciting violence, at the point where you're encouraging people who are committing these acts of, you know, terrorism, I think, you know, that's where it becomes unacceptable. And at the point where you're, you know, you're promoting, it's essentially the accounts of people who are organizing this rioting and this disruption and this mass criminality, that's not free speech anymore. It's providing endorsements to the most awful kinds of action. And that's where it becomes unacceptable, because it's not like Elon Musk is talking about, you know, immigration or the problem of integrating immigrants into British society. He is actively fanning the flames. He is actively trying to spread the message of really dangerous, vile people. And that's a big problem. And, you know, you mentioned the UK kind of having gone too far in regulating this stuff. And I agree. And I think there is a bit of a worry now that the government is going to go even further. And we have had, you know, people being arrested or charged in the UK for things they've said online, which are essentially opinions. And I think that's awful. But I think when you have something like this, it kind of gives the government permission almost to say, oh, well, this is what we've been talking about. This is why we need to regulate online spaces more. This is why we need to tell you what you can and can't say. And so I think people like Elon Musk, you know, people who are notionally big defenders of free speech, do an enormous amount of harm to the cause of free speech, because they give their the opponents of free speech an enormous amount of ammunition to regulate what we can and can't say. And you've now got, so the Tory leadership contest is going on, you know, it's in full swing in the UK at the moment. You've now got various Tory leadership candidates pressing the government to regulate social media more, and to regulate social media in the same way that we regulate newspapers and normal media in the UK, and to make them criminally liable for the stuff that goes on their platforms. And I think that would be a really dangerous route to go down.
Yeah, Jack Rowlett joining us. This goes into something that's very big picture and a lot of what's going on in the world, but it's important to mark it right here is, you know, you called rioters terrorists. I agree. Once you go to violence, that's terrorism. That's not even rioting anymore. That's not even protesting anymore. But we see this all throughout. This is the playbook. You do something so extreme that the government creates an over-response, and usually an overreaching extreme response. And it feeds into the extremists going, see there, I told you, look how horrible these people are. And it perpetuates the cycle. We've seen this over and over again. This is the terrorist playbook. This is the agitator playbook. This is the radical playbook. That's the danger. And yet the whole of government, especially representative government, is do something. We don't talk about that core thing, because you got to discuss that before the crisis comes, because the crisis comes and everybody's like, do something. And the radicals, it plays right into their hands. So before we get to that point, how do we win that argument ahead of time of, yes, we have to be, because the more you throw fire at these people, the more they're going to throw fire back. How do we break that cycle? Because that seems to be the road the UK is going down with some of this, because from the radicals' point of view, Southport was a win. That's a win for them. And they're going to be like, okay, how do we have another one? But this time in Merseyside, this time in London, this time in Cardiff, or wherever, pick your place. the perpetrator of this crime came from Cardiff. That's why I said that. They'll probably want to try to stir up some stuff there because there's the whole Wales thing and more. You could fire up Ireland really fast. Scotland's a mess. You could do that. They want to spread this stuff. They see this not as a loss. They see this as a template.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely great for them, and they're almost goading the government into over-responding, as you say. And I think the government so far has really tried to remain fairly calm. And as much as there has been polling that suggests that people think that the government should be cracking down harder, maybe they should. But actually, that kind of steady approach is designed, I think, not to play into the hands of the agitators. I think what you really need, though, is you need consensus at the top of politics. You need condemnation of this type of conduct from different sides of the aisle. And you need, and this comes from commentators like us as well, because I think you really need to be able to separate out what's happening from broader concerns about immigration and integration. And what we've seen in the UK over the past week is a lot of talk from commentators, a lot of talk from columnists, kind of saying, oh, well, you know, this rioting's bad. You know, we would rather it wasn't happening, but you can kind of understand why they're rioting, given immigration's so high, given we've got all these problems with integration. And actually, that's just not the case. They're just not related in that way. Like these far-right agitators will look for any opportunity to commit these acts of terrorism. It doesn't matter that the immigration rate is high. And millions of people in this country are concerned about immigration. You know, it's one of the most important issues facing the country, according to about half the population. We should deal with the issue of immigration. We should deal with the issue of integration because those people care about it, not because terrorists and, you know, far-right agitators are trying to set hotels on fire. And you can't draw an equivalence between those two things. They are not related. You know, criminality is not related to legitimate political concerns, and the vast majority of people who have those concerns, vast majority, you know, are just ordinary people. They're not out on the streets burning things or committing crime. And the linking of these people who are doing this rioting at the moment, I think it kind of comes out of the like January the 6th kind of playbook of like linking what is, you know, a relative minority of Trump supporters, for example, to the rest of them. And then you tar them all with the same brush. And I think that's kind of happening here. There are certain commentators and certain politicians who are trying to link those two things together. And that creates more extremism, it creates more tension, and it creates more distance between people and politicians. And that makes it harder to bring people back together and to solve the problem.
Yeah, Jack Rowlett joining us. Let's loop back to immigration for just a second, because here's the problem. You talk these far-right groups, you're not going, let's just have some honesty here real quick. You're not going to have an all-white Britain. Britain is going to get more and more demographically diverse, as most countries in the West will. America is doing the same thing. We have the latest census. You're going to get more and more diversity. You're going to need immigration. The way the UK is set up, with the way the government is structured with things like NHS, you have to have an expanding tax base to pay for all that, which means you either got to have a high birth rate, y'all don't got one, or you're going to need a lot of immigration, which you're going to need. This problem is not going away, because if you didn't have immigration, if they got what they wanted, your entire society would collapse. Sorry, that's just truth. That's math. That's not debatable. So how do you get these minority views? Because here's the problem. They play into the dark corners of human nature, and human nature is pretty much undefeated unless you work really, really hard at it. Does the country just not want to have that conversation about what immigration really means? It's not just our country's changing. It's like, no, we have to change or the country ceases to function as we know it. Is that just something that's avoided? Is it talked about? Is it taboo? Because you can see the financial cliff of this country coming in the UK, and the US has the same problem with its national debt and other things as well. You got to have a big tax base to pay for big government stuff. If you don't have that tax base, you got to import it. That's just the way this stuff works, but people don't want to talk about it in those terms. They want to talk about it in culture war terms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you use that word taboo, and that's it. There is this big taboo about talking about immigration and integration. And I think we talked about this 6 weeks ago or so when we were talking about the general election. You know, there's this kind of divide on the issue of immigration. You have kind of extremists on both sides. You have people like Nigel Farage, who would really like to eliminate all immigration. stop people from coming to this country. And then you have lots of progressives, kind of center-left people, liberals, who are kind of scared to talk about it, and they want more immigration, but they're not prepared to talk about issues of integration or how you can make immigration work. They don't want to, they want more immigration without talking about any of the issues that surround it. And most people in this country are in between those two extreme points, right? But there's a big overrepresentation of those two extreme points in big P politics, like in parliament. And so it's kind of led to this stagnation over the issue, because we can't have a proper debate about immigration, because if you have concerns about immigration, you're labeled a racist. And if you're, you know, a person who says, well, you know, I think we actually do need some immigration because our, you know, dependency ratio, we've only got about, you know, we've got less than 3 workers per dependent now compared to over 4 25 years ago, and it's going to fall to 2 by 2050. You know, we need to expand the tax base. Our birth rate is falling, as you say, we need people. But if you make that argument, you're said to be, you know, oh, you're not being realistic, people won't put up with it, you know, we need to reduce immigration, the people want to reduce immigration. So there's just not an adult conversation about it. And I think the conversation has to move to making immigration work, to accepting that we need immigration, but also accepting that integration is a problem. We have lots of people coming to the UK, and you know, wherever they come from, they tend increasingly to live in communities surrounded by very similar people. So you have Muslims coming to the UK, and they live in almost all Muslim communities in a lot of cases. And then you have all white communities. And that's not a recipe for success as a nation. You need, if you're going to have large amounts of immigration, you need different cultural groups to live alongside each other, because we've essentially segregated people. And it's led to the point where you have these, you know, communities where there are large numbers of Muslims, and then, you know, there's enormous pressure exerted on the education system by elders in the community who don't want LGBTQ education, or they don't want education about religions other than Islam. You know, there's a teacher that had to go into hiding in the UK because he showed a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, and then he got an enormous amount of death threats from the local Muslim community, and the police here did absolutely nothing about it. And so there's this kind of idea that, you know, different standards, different kind of communities are being held to different standards. And I think that's a problem that occurs when you have segregation in terms of different cultural groups living completely separately. That's a big problem. And if we don't solve that, we are going to see more and more tension. And I'm not talking about the tension that we've seen in terms of the rioting. I'm talking about tension of ordinary people, you know, normal people who aren't committing acts of crime, but they will be voting for increasingly extremist political parties. They will be expressing increasingly extremist opinions because immigration isn't being dealt with by the vast majority of the political class at the moment. And the only people talking about that issue of integration are people whose fundamental worldview is nonsense, who are completely closed to the idea that we need to broaden the tax base, and who want to get rid of all immigration rather than make it work.
Yeah, Jack Rowlett joining us. There's a lot of ugly to the stories on the immigration in the UK. The thing is, the ugly is playing into the bad. We've already covered that portion of it. But just to put a bow on this, how do you see the national leadership needing to talk about this? What do you think the national leaders need to be saying about this? We talked about, we opened up with the crisis of government. What's the one key item they need to be doing here? Obviously, the rioting in the streets, but they're going to have some kind of an immigration program here that settles people down, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think on the one hand, you need to say, the government needs to come out and say, you know, explicitly, you're not a racist if you think that the current immigration system is not working, and you're not a racist if you're concerned about integration. And they need to say, actually, let's have immigration, but let's say, you know, people can come here from all over the world, but it's about values. You know, if you share Britain's values, if you share the values of liberal democracy, you are very welcome here. And if you don't share the values of liberal democracy, then we're not going to tolerate that. You know, it is not okay to come here and, you know, abuse teachers and kind of scare them into hiding, or to try and exert pressure on the education system to determine what is and isn't taught because of your religion. It's not okay to kind of have a different standard of expectation of women's behavior in one community from another. You know, we are a liberal society. We believe in individual choice. We believe in, you know, the tolerance and coexistence of different peoples, and we believe in individual rights. And if you believe in those things, you can come to this country. And if you don't, then we're going to crack down on that. And I think that that's the key thing that needs to be done. It has to move to being a values-based thing. Because when you know, I think for lots of the people who really want to reduce immigration, they almost think that the problem of integration is innate, right? That people from other parts of the world are never going to be British, or they're never going to fit in with the British way of life, because those cultural differences are completely embedded. And I don't think that, and I don't think most people think that. But I think you have to confront the issue that while those differences aren't innate, those differences do exist, and you need to solve them, and you need to integrate those communities. And that will happen in the education system. It will happen by challenging attitudes, and it will happen by ensuring, I think maybe we need to look toward what the Danish have done in this regard, to ensuring that communities are a mixture of different cultural groups, rather than having, you know, white neighborhoods, Muslim neighborhoods, Hindu neighborhoods, etc. Because in lots of parts of the country, that is increasingly what's happening.
Yep, he's Jack Nostalgic on Twitter. Otters and Insights is the Substack. Make sure you're following. We're going to keep having you back, buddy, because you do good. Tough topic. You did good talking through it. We'll keep an eye on these developments. Jack Rowlett, appreciate your time, sir. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. All the music on Her Tell is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.